This program is brought to you by Jewel, sous vide by Chef Steps. Jewel takes the guesswork out of cooking. Learn more at chefsteps.com/joule.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Welcome to Food Without Borders, a show about food, politics, and identity. I'm your host, Sari Kamen, and you are listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.org. Today, my guests are the authors and collaborators of a new cookbook called The Bread and Salt Between Us. The main author is Mayada Anjari. She's on the line with me. Mayada, hello. Am I saying your name correctly?
Hello, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm good.
So
Thank you.
Great. Before I introduce the rest of our guests, I'm just going to explain your bio because I think it's important to give a little background about you before we talk about the book. So Mayada is from Syria. In 2016, she came to the United States. She was in Jordan at the time. She came over with her husband and her four children under the Refugee Admissions Program of the U.S. government. And now that she's here, she's helping her family build a new life by cooking for hundreds of people who have attended her sold-out dinners with Mayada and friends in New York City. Now her personal recipe collection of easy-to-approach dishes and the story of her journey and the culinary traditions that have sustained her are beautifully chronicled in a new publication from Lake Isle Press. The book is The Bread and Salt Between Us. It's been named one of the best cookbooks coming out this fall. It is now out by Food and Wine. And each person involved with the preparation and publication of the book volunteered their time and talents so that all proceeds will benefit Mayada's family and other refugees and asylum seekers, which is amazing. So Mayada's on the line. The book was co-written with Mayada with Jennifer Sitt, who's not here with us, but we do have Dalia El-Nuihi. She's translating for Mayada if need be. We've got her like on backup on the sidelines. And we also have Mira Avnine, who did the food styling, and we have Liz Clayman, who did the photography here in studio. So welcome, everybody. I'm so happy you're all here.
Hi, thanks for having us.
Yes. So Mayada, thanks again for joining us on the line. I would like to hear, before we start, the title, The Bread and Salt Between Us, it's just really powerful as far as its imagery goes. Can you explain to me where the title came from?
Anybody to translate?
Sure, that's what Dalia is here for.
Anyway, Mayada.
Yeah, please, okay.
السؤال أيوة ماما السؤال الكتاب اسمه اللي بتقول الخبز والعيش بالضبط جاي منين
شو بيعني
شو بيعني وانتي اخترتي لي
انا اخترته هو بيعني انه يعني صار في عشرة بيناتنا يعني بيننا وبين هوني مثلا من بين كنيسي بين الناس الأمريكان يعني إنه هاي معناها إنه في عشرة بيناتنا يعني أنت علي كيف؟
So it's basically symbolic of friendship between the Syrian families and the American population.
Okay. Yeah. So I think Mira or Liz or Mayada. Anyone can speak to this question. How did the idea for the book come about, and what was the inspiration to create a cookbook?
I'll take that.
Okay, Mira.
Because I think I was one of the in the domino effect of reaching out to contacts. I was kind of one of the last ones. But essentially, Mayada had been cooking at Rutgers Presbyterian, who sponsored their transition here, and they had tapped her to cook at the church as a way for her to make some money for her family, using the skills that she had. And then I think at some point at the church, it was thought about making a cookbook as a way to kind of aggregate her ability to make some more income from her skills. So I think someone at the church reached out to the graphic designer, Allegra, and Allegra knew Liz from days at Third Ward.
Yes.
And then Liz, because most people don't know how cookbooks get made, turned around and said to Rutgers, yes, I'd love to do it. Who's making the food? And when they looked at her blankly, because most people, again, don't know how cookbooks actually get made, she turned around and said, I've got someone. So and then she tapped me. So that was kind of the origin story of how the book came to be.
But I think it was really interesting because the original idea was just sort of making a collection of the recipes, and the more people that came into it, it became a much more like serious project. It's not like a, you know, like a Kinko's bound pamphlet of like some photos that we shot on the fly. I think we shot it over 6 or 7 days, and there was I don't know, the team was really amazing, and it was an awesome experience to...
It really is a dream team. I mean, yeah. this is a real cookbook that's garnered, you know, national media attention and is full of, like, beautiful recipes and photography. So I guess I would ask, I mean, this might be, like, an obvious question, but I still kind of want to hear it from both of you. Like, what was so compelling and special about this project that you agreed to do it, to work on it pro bono? Because that's pretty unusual.
It was the easiest yes ever. I don't even think I spent 15 minutes mulling it over. It was happening at a time, I guess this started probably a year and a half ago. And it was happening at a time of a lot of things were going on in this country that I was feeling pretty uncomfortable with and pretty helpless. And it's like, cool, you can give $100 to like the Red Cross and it goes off and you think you're helping somebody somehow, but it wasn't tangible. And when I got this email from Dave Mauman, who's the amazing director of events at Rutgers Presbyterian. I didn't have to think twice about it. I was like, this is a real person and a real woman who I can relate to. She has a family. She has a husband, and she's in Jersey. Like, she's here. She's part of our community now. Like, she's a tangible person that we could help. And
that's something you could do.
Yeah, it was something I could do. Yeah. And there was also a lot of, like, freedom creatively. I don't think Miata was familiar with cookbooks in general, and...
Right, she wasn't like, I'm going to move to America and be a cookbook author.
No,
I think it was her first time when she came to the U.S. that she actually saw a cookbook, because cooking...
Is that right, Miata? I don't know if you caught the question, maybe Dahlia can... If it was the first time you'd heard of a cookbook, yeah.
Yeah, أول مرة ميادة تشوفي كتاب... لوصفات الطبيخ صح ولا كان معنا ولا كان
انا كان معك اكيد
Yeah, she said it was the first time when we sat together and we flipped through a cookbook in her house when she was first arrived, so
I love it so much.
Yeah.
So yeah, there was a lot of creative sort of leniency, and like I've worked with Mira on a lot of projects before, and it was very much an art directed, very not stiff, but you know, There was an
you
outcome.
Get a brief.
There was an outcome that we needed to hit, and with this book, everyone was just like, "Let's make something as beautiful as we can." And Mira has a background in Israel, and so she had a lot of like sort of idea about the culturally appropriate props and fabrics, and I don't know. I was trying to pull from like all over the world, and she was like, good God, no, put that back. Like, you would never plate vermicelli on a dish like this. And so, it, you know, I learned a lot as well. So it was, yeah, it was an amazing amazing way to collaborate with a really awesome team, and getting to have a little bit of a difference in someone's life was important.
Yeah, it was an unusual way to make a cookbook. I mean, generally you don't sit with the photographer, with the graphic designer, with the authors, with the publisher, and then Dave and project manager to kind of talk at every step. But we truly did. We sat in my living room and we wrote down a bunch of different ideas and came up with some really kind of titles that started to sound like Under the Tuscan Sun, that didn't feel quite right and a little too like you know, bodice ripper. and then we finally, you know, arrived at this title. But it was an interesting, and because we didn't follow kind of like this cookie cutter way of making a cookbook, there, you know, it was smoother in some ways and bumpier in some ways.
I was going to say maybe it took some of the pressure off because you didn't do it traditionally, feeling like you had to hit certain deadlines that you were working with. I don't know.
No, I mean, I think it did take some of the pressure off, but it also creates, there's like a lot more transparency that, for instance, the photographer at some point would probably just hand over images after getting the brief and then would kind of be hands off. But we were able to look through the proof and, you know, call out things. Liz, I mean, we sat right outside Rutgers Presbyterian in the daylight and kind of went through this proof, and Liz was able to flag things that, you know, she loved, didn't love, and make those corrections that ordinarily wouldn't happen in a normal cookbook process.
Yeah. So, but then I think there was also something where it was like a too many cooks in the kitchen. forgive my pun, but you know, also, like, the food stylist and the photographer would never normally have a say in the title of the book.
Right.
That would be up to Miata and Jen, and then probably more ultimately the publisher. But
yeah.
It was a dozen of us sitting around being like, ah.
Miata, is it okay if I ask you some questions about your background and your just, you know, your journey and the way you came to the United States ultimately?
Okay.
So I know that you and your husband and your family, you left Syria in 2013 because of the civil war happening in Syria, and you rocked across the border to Jordan, which is sort of an unfathomable thing to imagine and picture, just, you know, taking that very brave leap of faith. What made you take such a huge risk, and then what were you thinking about as far as, like, why you would go to Jordan, and what were you hoping would happen once you crossed the border?
So, فهمت أسألك يعني الرحلة بتاعتك من سوريا للأردن إيه اللي خلاكي تاخدي قرار زي ده يعني وإيه الحاجات اللي دفعتك يعني على إن أنت تنقلي عائلتك من الأردن من سوري من سوريا للأردن و I'm sorry, what was the second
part? I guess, what were you imagining would happen once you got to Jordan?
What did you hope would happen? Yeah. Yeah. And
what did you
hope would happen when you got to Jordan? First of all, I didn't
have any security in Syria. The time كان was فترة 6-7 months, there was no security at
all.
وما في مدرسة لأولادي إنه غير مدينة تاني وصعب جدا إنه وصلوا لمدينة تاني لأنه ما في أمان.
So the security was a very big issue, and there wasn't in her neighborhood there wasn't any closed schools, so they had to send the kids off to schools that were far away, and the security situation was extremely bad. So that's one of the reasons why they decided to make the move to Jordan.
Okay.
So.
Security.
Right, and her husband couldn't find a proper job. There wasn't no jobs available at the time, so they did it out of livelihood and out of security.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. And then what was the reality like once you and your family arrived in Jordan?
فما وصلت الأردن يا ميادة شو إيه كان الواقع بتاعك؟
وقت وصلت الأردن دخلونا على مخيم بتاع تاري من ليلة فيه وثاني يوم أنا في عندي هناك قرايبين ابن عمي هو بيصير أخذ وحدة أردنية يعني تكفلونا وطلعنا على المدينة.
So they came and they processed them into a refugee camp in Jordan, and then I believe that they Mayeda, you said a cousin, right? Ibn Amik? Oh, and her cousin, basically, who lived in Jordan, came and picked them up, and he took them to live with them. So they didn't stay too long in the refugee camp before family members came and took them out.
Mm-hmm. And then how did you end up coming to the United States?
جيتي أمريكا إزاي يا مياد؟
كيف جيت أمريكا؟
يعني جيتي إزاي؟ يعني إيه كان
الأمم المتحدة اتصلوا هني قالوا خبرونا إنه بتحب تسافر على أمريكا إلنا مني.
So the United Nations had basically they processed paperwork and then the United Nations contacted them and said, would you like to go to the United States? Mm-hmm. So, and then that started the whole process of them going through the refugee process.
Was it an immediate yes? I mean, did you ever question whether or not you wanted to do that, or did you just decide, you know, you knew right away that you wanted to make that transition?
فهمتي يا ميادة؟
لا والله
بيقول لك انت اول ما عرفتي ان امريكا هي اللي طلعت لك كان عندك اي شكوك او اي يعني ما كنتيش عايزه تروحي ولا كنتي على طول عايزه تروحي يعني وافقتي على طول؟
لا عادي كنت عايزه اروح طبعا يعني ما هو هم سالونا واحنا قلنا لهم ايه ان احنا بنتمنى يعني نسافر على امريكا.
So she said no, of course we wanted to come, it was a dream for them. Once they found out that, you know, it was America, they said absolutely we would, there's nothing better we could hope for.
Mm-hmm. So Rutgers Presbyterian Church is the organization that sponsored your resettlement, and I read that when you arrived in the United States, they provided what's called a culturally appropriate meal, which is like an interesting policy that's mandated by the State Department, which is something that I had never heard of before, and I think that's one policy that I like that we have. So what was it like to arrive in the United States and then be greeted with a meal that was familiar to you? And it's also so interesting to read that the woman who made you the meal, who is a member of the church, had never cooked Syrian food before. So what did that feel like to come here and then taste something that felt like home?
So Mayeda, السؤال أما أنت وصلتي يعني في نيو جيرسي وجيتي ولقيتي أكلة معمولة يعني أكلة سوري ليكي، كان إيه إحساسك وخصوصا لما تعرفي إن الست اللي طبخته ما كانتش أصلا سورية؟
مظبوط. طب كتير انبسطت إنه يعني مهتمين فينا وعاملين مجهزين أكل، يعني كانوا مجهزين لك كتير شغلات ما بتاكل.
So she said it was really amazing to see how much attention they've paid to every detail. It wasn't just necessarily the food, it was everything. I mean, every single detail was provided for. So they were thrilled. She said it made all the difference.
So I know you cooked a lot when you lived in Syria, and I don't know, maybe to a certain extent when you were in Jordan with your family. How did you start cooking these dinners that have happened with the church organization that you're involved with? Like, how were you able to sort of reclaim your role as someone who is a cook, is a, you know, not necessarily a chef, but someone who cooks a lot and provides for people?
So, Mayeda, سؤال انت كنت بتطبخي كتير وانت في سوريا فما جيتي هنا ولقيتي فرصة ان انت تطبخي إيه اللي حصل بحيث إن الفرصة دي تيجي يعني إن أنت تطبخي في الكنيسة؟
يعني شلون كيف اللي حصل؟
وأنت حسيتي إن أنت في طبعك إن أنت يعني بتحبي الطبيخ يعني وحسيتي إن دي كانت فرصة إن أنت
أكيد بحب الطبخ عادي يعني متعودي عليه يعني.
So she said basically the cooking was something that she's used to. So whether it was a big family or a big church, a big church gathering, she was used to it and she just rolled right in.
It's very comfortable. All right, we're going to take a quick break, just hear from our sponsors. Maybe let Mayada know just to hang on for a moment while we hear a commercial and then we'll be right back.
Mayada fi alanet fastani shway, okay?
Mashi, okay.
This program is brought to you by Jewel Sous Vide. My name is Katie Mosman Wadler. I'm the executive director of HRN and a real-life Jewel user. I use Jewel to help me host the most delicious dinner parties. When you cook with Jewel, there's zero guesswork. So steak, chicken, seafood, turkey, vegetables, and eggs all come out exactly the way you like them. The Paired app is super intuitive and has a great visual dentist guide. Jewel is awesome for prepping many perfect portions, making it easy to cook for a crowd And it's hands-free, so you can focus on entertaining while Jewel does the work. And pro tip, Jewel is also great for travel. I throw mine in my suitcase if I'm headed to a rental house with any kind of uncertain kitchen. From perfect steak to juicy, tender Thanksgiving turkey, Jewel makes the best food you've ever tasted. Just be sure to save some room for mini jars of pumpkin pie. Jewel, perfect food every time. To get yours, visit chefsteps.com/Jewel and use code HRN, as in Heritage Radio Network, to get $15 off for a limited time. That's chefsteps.com/JOULE, code HRN. And fall asleep just to wake up.
Okay, thanks. Hey, you're listening to Food Without Borders on heritageradionetwork.org. I'm your host, Sari Kamen, and I'm in studio with the team that collaborated to make the beautiful new cookbook, The Bread and Salt Between Us, which is authored by Mayada Anjari, and I have Dalia Elanuihi here helping to translate, and Mira Evnine and Liz Clayman, who did food styling and photography. So welcome back, everyone, and thanks for sticking with us. And we have Mayada on the line still. Hello.
Hello.
Mayada, when you started to work on the cookbook, how did you decide what recipes you would include?
ردي بالإنجليزية مياده لو تقدري فالسؤال ايه قررتي ازاي تعملي تختاري الاكلات اما عملتي ما كنتي بتنظمي الكتاب
هو انا بدي اقول انه يعني اخترت اكل اللي بطبخه انا دائما بالبيت يعني.
So she chose foods that she cooks often at the house.
And then was there, I mean, maybe Mira and Liz can talk about this a little since you were all so collaborative. Like, was there a process of elimination that happened? Were there recipes that hit the cutting board, the cutting floor, I should say, not board?
not in our experience. I think that when we received the manuscript, it was already set. I think Mayada really dictated what she cooks at home. The recipes are very much how she cooks for her family specifically. Mm-hmm. She has three boys and a young daughter, Jana. And so she's very aware, like most mothers, of what the kids like. So she included things that she really loves, like for herself, the khabza recipe, which is a chicken and rice recipe, is very much her favorite thing. And then everything else in there is, I think, things that she cooks at home regularly.
Yeah, I can probably speak to that a little bit more because I was there with Jen. So every Saturday we'd get together for a few months. And
this is Dalia who translated.
Yes. So I was there to help translate for Mayada and Jen. So Jen would come. We'd come in during the morning usually, and we'd have a cup of coffee or a cup of tea, whatever you want. And we talk a little bit about her. You know, to tell stories about her in Syria. That's how we compiled a lot of that's how Jen compiled a lot of the stories on her background. And from that kind of arose, well, what are we going to cook today? So Mayada would pick about four or five recipes. She goes, I picked this recipe because of this, 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 and that. And she'd give reasons, and we'd go to C-Town and get the ingredients and then come back, and then we start cooking for hours. And then a big feast at the very end. We'd all sit around the table with Mayada and her family, and we'd have a tasting test.
Yeah, sounds fun.
It was great.
Mayada, which are the recipes that feel the most special, that have the most memories for you that are in the book?
So Mayada... أنهي أكلات بالذات ليها ذكريات مميزة عندك؟
في مثلاً الكبسي ومع الدجاج، في الدجاج مع البطاطا بالفرن كمان.
Okay, so كبسة with the chicken, and the chicken and potatoes are ليه بقى؟
يعني خاصين إنه كان مثلاً في الكبة كمان المقلية مثلاً كان كل ما نجتمع مع أهلي في سوريا كنا نعمل هدول الأكلات بالذات يعني.
Right, and fried kibbeh as well. And she said usually those are the meals that she would cook whenever the family would get together in Syria. So it's like a
special occasion. She thinks of her family.
Correct.
Right.
Yeah.
And then what recipes, Mayada, would you suggest if someone has the book but they've never cooked Syrian food, where should they start?
So Mayada, لو الواحد عنده كتاب وعمره ما طبخ أكل سوري قبل كده تقول لهم يبتدوا بأنهي وصفة؟
بختار له ينقي الوصفات الخفيفة الأول يعني عشان
زي
يعني أسهل له أسهل.
طب زي إيه مثلا؟
مثلا الكفتة يعني سهل كتير, اللحمة بالفرن اللي عملناها الكفتة بالفرن إنه سهل ما بده كتير صعوبة يعني.
So Mayada suggests starting off with the easier recipes, and when I asked her which one she thinks is the easiest, she says the kofta in the oven, which is pretty simple. It's like a beef and just put a lot of spices in and you pop them in the oven and you it's really, really delicious, actually.
So Jose Andres wrote the foreword of the cookbook, and in the foreword he writes that food is the ultimate bridge. And Mayada, I was wondering if you could say if that's been true for you and it resonates with your experience in coming to America and introducing people to your family and to your heritage through your food. Sorry, I know you'll have to simplify that. Yeah.
So, Mayada, السؤال إن الكاتب what's his name again?
Jose Andres.
Jose Andres,
chef.
كان كتب إن الأكل زي ما يكون تواصل, يعني بيساعد التواصل ما بين الناس. فده كان برضو خبرتك بعد ما عملتي الكتاب, يعني أنت حاسة إن في فعلا تواصل بينك وبين الناس اللي أنت بتتعاملي معهم وتعرفك على يعني بيهم وبأهلك وهم بيكي وبأهلك.
ما كثير فهمت عليك يا داليا, شو القصة في الموضوع يعني؟
السؤال إن هل أنت حسيتي إن الكتاب يعني ساعدك في التواصل مع
تواصل.
الناس؟
أكيد عمل تواصل مظبوط, يعني في كذا شخص يعني أنا ما بعرفهم بس ما بعرف كيف أخذين رقمي عما يبعثوا لي مثلا إنه جربوا أكلة الكبي وآخر شيء ضبطت معهم.
So she said absolutely it would help connect a lot with you know, the people who have read the book and even with among her friends that she meets at the church. And she goes, I've actually had a lot of, you know, several people write in and tell me that they tried these recipes and that it was really, really good. She was thrilled about that.
Liz, Mira, Daya, I'd love to hear you kind of answer the same question, like how working on this project has made you feel more connected to Mayada or just to learning, you know, about a new kind of food, different kinds of people.
You want to go first, please?
I mean, you talked a little bit about how this just felt like this was something meaningful you could do. So maybe sort of elaborate on that.
Yeah, I mean, I think I always think of the camera as like this passport or this little magical pass that gets me into all of these situations that I could have never imagined. And this was definitely one of the most like deeply heartfelt, impactful like projects that I have ever worked on. And yeah, it's all through the lens of like sharing meals with each other. And I first met Mayada, we were at one of the Rutgers church dinners, and I don't know, there's just something very magical about watching her command a kitchen, and she's so out of her element and at the same time so very comfortable. And it's like Jen in one of the recipe intros talks about how dicing and chopping and sauteing and frying, it's like this common language, and it's like through the action that we all share the same thing all over the world. And it was really powerful.
I guess everyone has their magic wand. For Liz, it's the camera, and she's very disarming with it, and she's petite, but she smiles, and she like always gets a very honest reaction from people. And for me, it's cooking and talking to people about food, and you know, everybody eats, so there's when I'm at a loss for connecting with someone, if I don't know, I can ask them, you know, what did they eat that morning or what have they cooked recently, and enter that way. So for me, just recently, actually, just today, out in the New York Times is an article about Mayada and her first Thanksgiving and how Thanksgiving is for everybody. And I was lucky enough to go and cook with her together while the photographer was there, and just kind of assist and guide her through making pie, which is ironic because I didn't grow up in an American household, and I've taught myself how to make pie. So I got to teach Mayada how to make pie. It was in those several hours together that we had some conversations that we wouldn't have normally had the opportunity to have, because she's a busy mom. She has four kids, you know, she's got her hands full. But it was a chance to play with her daughter while we were cooking and chat. And, you know, it's very disarming, and very casual conversations can start. So questions about my age came up, and questions about the photographer's age came up, and like it just feels all of a sudden like you've known each other for a while when you're talking about something to cook. And if you can pick up on something, flavors or whatever it is that that are heart, you know, attach the heartstrings, you very quickly can connect, even if language is a slight barrier. But so that was really special for me to have that time with her. Yeah.
Yeah. Anything else you want to chime
well,
in?
Well, for me, I also volunteered as a translator, but actually I volunteered from the very beginning. So when Mayada first came to the United States, I wasn't there at the airport, but I followed up and I helped them settle in their new home. And, you know, I did try to translate that. So it's really, I think the best part is just seeing the entire journey, like from so up close. And I'm dumbfounded, you know. And then when Dave said, you know, you want to help out with the cookbook, I said, of course, I wouldn't miss it for the world. But yeah, so Mayada is more than just, you know, the project. She's actually just, it was amazing just to embrace her when they came in, her and her family, and try to help as much as we can from the very beginning. And it's just amazing to see that this is the end product after just a very short period of time that she's already has, you know, with the work of everybody who's collaborating. I mean, it really is a work of love. I mean, I really do feel it, and it's blessed that way. There is a blessing in that book.
Yeah. And the book really wouldn't have happened without Dahlia's help. I mean, we needed that translation, that bridge. And Mayada's English has grown leaps and bounds. It's incredible to have been able to have conversations with you. But thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity.
Yeah. Well, you referenced the New York Times piece, which is out today, which is such a beautifully written piece by Julia Moskin about immigrants and embracing the American Thanksgiving and adopting new traditions. So, Mayada, I wanted to ask, I know you had a practice run for the article, but are you going to be cooking for Thanksgiving next week?
Yes, I will cook for Thanksgiving.
What are you going to make?
Turkey.
Turkey.
Yeah, because my children love it.
Your children loved it.
Your children loved it.
Yeah.
Will you be making any of the American side dishes or more Syrian side dishes?
عم تسألني من التركي بيعملوا إنه أكل سورة ولا أمريكا؟
بالضبط. جنبه التركي يعني.
جنب التركي لا بدي أعمل رز الكبسي يعني رز الكبسي تبع أكل سوريا.
So Syrian kapsa.
Syrian, yeah.
Kapsa. Syrian
kapsa. It sounds good. Mm-hmm. I'll be coming over. Can I come to your Thanksgiving?
Yeah.
I want to try your food, but I'll have to cook it from the book now that I have it. So, Mayada, thank you so much for speaking to us today. And congratulations on your first cookbook. Probably not your last. And Liz and Mira and Dahlia, thank you so much for joining us in studio. And everyone who's listening, I wanted to also mention that the Heritage Radio Network Gala is coming up on December 3rd. It is a It was one of my most favorite nights of the year last year, the first time we did it. It's just an amazing celebration. It's all different chefs, and you just walk around eating and drinking the entire night. And, you know, what could be better than that? It's super festive. And you should go to heritageradionetwork.org and get tickets before they're sold out. All the hosts will be there, and we will probably dress up. So you should come. And there will be music and festivities and, like I said, delicious things to eat and drink. So thanks, everyone, for listening. You can listen to the podcast on iTunes, on Spotify and Stitcher, as well as always finding our archived shows on heritageradionetwork.org. We'll see you back next week, Wednesday at 6 p.m.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.